Welcome to the Velvet Studio, home of Ottawa's queer media. And we have Michael, you're with me today.
I am.
I forgot who I am and where I am.
Yeah, I can speak all I want from the back of the room, but up at the microphone is much better.
Yeah, let me just... Okay, no, I can't hear everything. Excellent. So, what a week.
An incredible week. It's always a good week.
Absolutely. Sebastian is on his way. He's on a bus, but it's taken a bit. Traffic is crazy
I know.
Today.
As soon as the weather gets nice, people forget how to drive
it's
in construction
true.
Season.
It is. There, you know, I mean, this our show goes out to multiple places, but in the city of Ottawa, there are only two seasons.
Yes, winter and construction.
Absolutely. You hear that first, folks. Winter and construction, the only two seasons that that exist in this town.
Well, yeah, if you have to use a road, you might as well get used to it.
That's certainly true. Now, today we have a meandering conversation.
Oh, good.
We'll be talking about language in a great detail.
Lexicography.
Absolutely. But before we kick into that, I just want to talk about some great news that's happened in the great news that's happened. Really, I was going to say in the news, but that's a little bit redundant. Absolutely. So Sinn Féin in Ireland, in Northern Ireland.
Yes.
Now in Britain, marriage is devolved to the government can't regulate. It's like the provinces.
Yeah.
So Northern Ireland, Wales, and Scotland. Can do marriages. They deal with it themselves. And England and Wales are dealt with by the British government.
The statutes.
Yeah. Absolutely. Anyway, point being, Sinn Féin have pledged to put same-sex marriage as a priority through the legislature, which is
awesome.
Pretty exciting.
Yes.
The political party, the DUP, is doing their darndest to block it.
Of course they are.
This is true. It was put through 53-51 votes a little while ago, but the DUP is trying to block it. But it looks like we may be seeing gay marriage in Northern Ireland, which
well,
is very
all the
exciting.
Same old tired arguments have been trotted out since Holland went with equal marriage equality and recognizing that we can love just as much as straight people can.
Absolutely. Speaking, we're continuing with good news. I'm just thrilled that we're having so much good news. Turning to the States now briefly, we've riled against HB2, House Bill Number 2 from where is it?
North Carolina.
Yeah, absolutely.
I have friends in North Carolina.
Oh.
I have friends from North Carolina. I have friends who have to travel through North Carolina.
This is...
Yeah.
So you're definitely familiar with North Carolina.
Yes.
Anyway, so HB2...
HB2, according to those of us not from the aisle.
Yes. HB2, or House Bill 2, has been found to violate Title 9 of the Civil Rights Act, according to the Justice Department, and Title 7, which prevents employers for discriminating... and Title IX prevents discrimination in education. Anyway, point being that the Department of Justice has told North Carolina, essentially, either stop this, or we'll just not give you hundreds of millions that we were going to give you. It would gut funding to education in the state.
It would pretty much wreck what's left of their economy after everybody else finishes pulling out, yes.
Absolutely, and there's definitely been a lot of people pulling out in North Carolina.
Yes, pulling out is always good for the straight crowd.
Absolutely, and that's quite a popular approach in North Carolina, is pulling out at the moment.
Apparently it doesn't work that well. I know.
The Charlotte, the town of Charlotte, we mentioned last time we discussed it, has estimated that millions have been lost by conventions just simply moving elsewhere.
That's right, yeah.
Disney and all the major studios are all...
Oh, yeah, thousands of jobs that were planned are suddenly going to the state next door.
Absolutely. I think Minnesota said to come to us. We don't discriminate like North Carolina.
Or like Michigan.
So Governor Pat McCrory has been told to essentially get his act together.
Well, yeah.
They got until Monday.
Yep, they're going to cave, and then they're going to blame it all on the Liberals and the North. Well, and, you know, it's just
Pat McCrory has already said there's a gay conspiracy to oust him from office.
There has been since when?
Probably since he signed this bill.
Yeah, pretty much. It's not a gay conspiracy.
It's not a conspiracy, but we're quite blatantly obvious. Get the hell out of office.
Yeah, you either have rights respected or or nobody gets rights. And that's the way they're leaning, is toward nobody getting rights.
His logic is barbaric.
Yes, most of them are.
I want to introduce a bill to specifically to discriminate against GOP folks. Wait, people don't like it? Well, it's clearly a plot to overthrow me.
Yeah, if you don't like it, you're bullying me.
Ridiculous. Ridiculous. Gay bullies when he's the one stripping rights.
Yeah.
I have no patience for this man.
No. I don't have any patience for a lot of people who think those ways.
Absolutely.
Including, sometimes family does it too. Which is something we all have a cross to bear.
Now, another story that popped up in the States. A video has emerged of a lesbian who is forcibly removed from a bathroom.
Because she doesn't look feminine.
She doesn't look... she looks too like a man. And there have been so many... This is only one. I've seen over the last couple of weeks two or three posts all around the same idea.
Yes.
Of, it's ridiculous. People being chucked out of bathrooms and being actually in one state. It caused a they locked it down under an active shooter kind of scenario because some guy was following a woman into a bathroom just to check that she was a woman.
Yeah,
this is ridiculous.
Yeah. It's completely
absolutely
stupid.
Ridiculous.
But nobody's ever checking the guys' bathrooms. Why is that? They're only checking the ladies' washrooms.
It is.
It's just a little bizarre. Maybe it's because most of us bizarre. Guys beyond don't give a
hello,
crap
Sebastian.
Who's peeing next to us.
Hello. Sebastian.
Hello, Sebastian.
Will be joining us in just a second.
He's got to hang up his belongings.
Absolutely.
His accoutrements.
Hang up his hat. Now, we're not going to play the video, but you can find it on pinknews.ca.
Well, yeah, it's kind of hard to play the video over the air.
I mean, and the audio quality on the video is rather terrible.
Yeah.
So we're not gonna go through that.
I have a lot of friends who are gender indeterminate when you look at them. And it's just, get over it, people.
We are sticking briefly still to the States. The U.S. House of Representatives are trying to axe the Obama's executive bill on LGBT rights in the armed forces.
It's all the same
equal
kinds
protections.
Of people. Yeah.
And he's like, they're trying to amend the armed forces bill just to kind of supersede that because they have has the weight of law. We'll see how that goes.
Well, they do have elections coming, and they need to pander to the radical supporters because those are the only ones who can guarantee will turn up at the polls. Anybody
absolutely.
Who's radicalized one way or the other.
Here is my last American good news story. the U.S. Department of Education names and shames schools discriminating against LGBT kids.
Awesome.
If you want your kids to grow up in an environment where there's institutional homophobia,
these
if
are the
answer is no, just avoid this list of schools.
Yeah.
I may have forgotten to turn Sebastian's mic on.
Hello.
Oh, he's back now. Hello, Sebastian. We can hear you finally.
Well, I've also been fairly quiet since I got here.
Oh, that's fair. moving quickly to some other good news. Zimbabwe's opposition leader has said that he won't prosecute gays, Morgan Tsvangirai, which is great news out of Zimbabwe. The Faroe Islands have legalized same-sex marriage and adoption.
Yes.
Which is wonderful news.
Which is actually a very big deal because they have way more men than women. I think it's 60% male or something.
Oh, really?
They lose their women very quickly.
I see what you mean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, yes.
The pool gets smaller and smaller. Yeah. Yeah. Pool of available
resources.
They have
fewer people in the Faroese Islands than in Iceland.
Yeah. Isn't that the islands that you like the fishermen from?
Yes. Faroese fishermen?
Yes.
The Italians have made lesbians can now adopt each other's kids, which is wonderful, which is great Italian news. South Africa's first gay rugby team has launched. Have you seen this?
I did see a couple of pictures on Facebook because I spend so much time there. But I think it's awesome news.
I think this is, and actually this segues very nicely into our conversation today around language. So the Jaws Cats, I think is the name of...
Jaws Cats.
Yep.
It's Butch.
Yep. So what they've done is they've... I think they're from Johannesburg. The Jawsy Cats are a rugby club, South Africa's first gay rugby club. Mm-hmm. who have tried. They've released a campaign, and it's just photos of incredibly masculine-looking men. I mean, the rugby players.
Rugby players almost all look masculine.
It's true, and they're holding like a rugby ball. And there's one, you know, this gentleman, and it says Pansy question mark, and he's holding some like some probably the Pansy is a type of flower, eh?
Yes.
Yeah. So he's holding some pansies and a rugby ball, and it really...
You can eat pansies, by the way, and I could eat that one.
And it really demonstrates the fact, you know, is this word, when you think of this word, you think of an effeminate man.
Well, a lot of us have been using these words.
Absolutely.
Ever since, right?
I mean, the one that's titled Queen, I mean, yes.
He should be wearing a kilt by the looks of him.
I know. He's Holy smokes. Very, very handsome man.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there's another one with, like, the title Fairy, and he looks like he's a lumberjack.
That's one of my favorite ones. Look at the beard on that man and ink on his arms. These guys could all be criminals, you know.
I think what's great about this campaign is that the whole idea is rugby, that's so gay. And they're really challenging the stereotypes of gay men being effeminate men.
Completely. The reality is, if 10%, only 10% of the male population is noticeably gay, how many of that 10% are actually more effeminate?
You think 10% is the actual number?
No, if.
That's a gross
rate. Yes. So we know that up to 70% of the population is willing to swing at any given moment. So that means we're a lot more than 10%. But if only 10% of visibly gay people are effeminate, visibly gay men are effeminate, that's just the stereotype that the rest of society has been pushing. Some of us have avoided being effeminate for most of our lives, and suddenly we discover we actually like ourselves as not feminine or feminine, depending on who we are.
I think we should pick apart the use of the word feminine, though, effeminate, just in the gay context, because gay men don't act like women. And women don't act like gay men.
You're right.
When people describe gay men as being effeminate, you wouldn't describe a woman as acting like a gay man.
No, absolutely.
No.
And so the comparison is really weird. What it actually is
it's misogyny is what it is.
Partly it's misogyny, but partly it's just the sort of like binary approach to gendering people that we have in the West, where you are a man and everything else is effeminate. And so feminine is considered to be non-masculine, and feminine is basically just defined as being non-masculine, generally speaking.
Right.
So when you're referring to a gay man as being effeminate, you're just saying he's not masculine.
Now, does that come out of our Indo-European languages, where there's so many languages that are that are not gender neutral, the way English is ostensibly more gender neutral?
Well, okay, so most Indo-European languages have a neuter. English lost its neuter case quite some time ago. It's neuter gender. But actually, our binary thinking came from Babylon. If you look at the history of most Indo-European cultures, they really do celebrate diversity.
Yes.
But it was the Babylonian influence on early Christians. And Babylon had long since been gone by then. But like the
So you're saying roughly the same people who are into monotheistic religions are responsible for this construct.
Yeah, basically, the duality nature of Christianity did not start off in Christianity. If you look at Judaism, the sort of like underlying thing for Christianity, there's very little duality. They acknowledge that men and women is the first divide among people, but that's about it. Beyond that, there's a lot of diversity. They're much more willing to look at shades of different kinds. And one of my favorite ways of actually explaining masculinity is using Chaucer.
Interesting.
Because if you actually read the Canterbury Tales...
Oh, it's been years. I was like 13 or 14.
That's totally 15. Fine. He describes masculinity in a way that's very typical of medieval England. Now, Chaucer actually was post-Renaissance.
Right.
So, I mean, it was quite some time later. But still, he talked about different kinds of men and different ways of being men. So the squire's tale, the squire was a bad man because he wasn't meant to be a squire. And in the reeve's tale, a reeve is basically just a medieval bureaucrat of sorts, started off as a carpenter and was a bad man, but then realized that he was a bad carpenter, became a reeve, and then he became a good man.
So in other words, he went into politics to improve his image.
No, it's just he had in the Reeves tale, it actually talks about how his personality wasn't well suited for being a carpenter.
Right.
And it's because tradesmen, so carpenters and smiths and brewmasters and things like that, were expected to be expressive and emotional and engaged, and they were supposed to be in touch with their feelings.
And these are the things that make their product live and breathe.
How can you be a good smith if you don't have good sensitivity?
If you can't work the irons with your emotions. Exactly. Be an artist.
Whereas a Reeve is meant to be a little bit more stoic, and a knight is meant to be a little bit more stoic. Mm. And so that they had different kinds of masculinity according to where you were in the world.
Your role in society.
And the weird thing is, here's the cool thing. If you look at the tradespeople, so like the bakers and the smiths and whatnot.
Right, and the coopers and the barrel makers. And
coopers are barrel makers.
They are, but they weren't always.
True, okay. the brewing, making beer and wine, as well as milling, was done largely by women.
Yes.
After the Black Plague. And it wasn't considered effeminate for a man to be a brewmaster, and it wasn't considered masculine for a woman to be a carpenter during that period anyway. Right. So a lot of people, when they think of, like, what does multiple genders look like, they have, you know, you have masculine on one end, feminine on one end, and a whole bunch of stuff in between that they don't get. So this was actually a completely, totally different period. So in English history, there was a neuter gender where if you were a male brewmaster or a female baker, that there was nothing amiss about that, because that type of person came in both man and woman, biological male and biological female forms. Whereas if you're talking about something like a Reeve, that was exclusively a masculine thing to do. And same thing with being a midwife or a nurse. So you had these things that were constrained, but, like, you also had all this middle stuff as well. And it was really weird when you're reading Chaucer. And, like, a lot of people are like, well, you know, he's just talking about personalities. But actually, he's talking about how society views the relationship between these people, their job, and their gender identity.
Right. Okay.
In a very indirect way that we don't really...
I have to reread Chaucer.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting.
Yeah. So the kind of, like, emotionally distant thing that you would expect a knight or a soldier to have... That's survival, basically. Mm-hmm. If you have emotions while you're hacking somebody's leg off, like, that's not going to be a very good thing.
Yeah. well, come to think of it, yeah.
Yeah. So
it'll grow back.
And it's just a flesh wound. Come back here, I'll bite your leg off. But that was what it meant to be a good man of that type.
Right.
And it wasn't considered effeminate. It was just to be.
So we could therefore blame industrialization and the growth of the machine culture as.
Well, it's more like Victorian war culture. During the expansionist era of British England, they killed off a lot of these traditionally British gender identities, because the only thing that you could be was a soldier.
Right.
It was the only valid thing, because if you weren't a soldier and if you weren't contributing...
Then you were a pariah.
...to British expansionism, then there was something wrong with
you.
Yeah. And so a lot of that was sort of, like, very deliberately killed off.
Now, is that Victorian, or did it actually start much earlier?
Well...
Because when you look back at their, like, short-lived revolution...
Like the Regency, are we talking about?
The Roundheads and all that...
I feel like this conversation is getting a little bit too
above.
I feel sorry for our listeners who are just, you know.
I think our listeners are fascinated.
They would be, because intellectual and academic pursuits in history are fascinating, and that's why I have a degree in history.
Yes.
Well, a lot of people don't think that.
Jibber-jabbering over the Renaissance isn't really in our show's remit.
Post-Renaissance?
Sorry, post-Renaissance. Oh, my God.
Good Lord, Luke.
All right, let's go back onto another topic. Fine, we're not going to go.
But so if you're talking about, like,
language is everything.
Alternative gender identities is really what this is about. And what does it mean to be a man? What does it mean to be masculine? And basically, I'm just rejecting the notion of gay men being effeminate because we don't act like women. Mm-hmm. Long story short.
We'll talk about the misogyny in the gay community and how that translates into our terms that we use for gay men and how it's understood. But before we do that, this is the band, and I apologize for mispronouncing the name, but Mashru Leila, and they are a Jordanian band that was briefly prevented from... it's a Lebanese band.
Lebanese band.
They were briefly prevented from performing in Jordan because their lead singer is gay. And it looks like they're fine to go. So this was all.
Yeah, they were
news.
On the national Canadian radio station earlier in the week about this very thing too.
CBC. CBC.
Yeah.
Anyways, so this is their song, 3 minutes, and we'll be back in probably around 3 minutes. جلدك في البس كل وجوهك هو في اتخبى بخزنتك في البس كل بدلتك بس هو في كونك اذا بدك في غني كل كلمتك هو في مسلك حياتك لما تسمعني بمريتك عم قول بس بالقيم من بدك وانا علشان ارضي اعطيني ثلاث دقايق دايني بثلاث دقايق بس بالقيم من بدك وانا علشان ارضي ركلي مهري عالطولي شك حلمك بخلخالي إذا بدك أو تمدد إذا ما بدك قول في وضحك إذا بدك يما أبكي إذا أنسب لك بس قول Hello and welcome back to the Velvet Studio, home of Ottawa's queer media. And my name is Xmas.
And I'm Mike Tattersall.
I'm Sebastian.
Hi, Sebastian.
Hello, Mike. How do you do?
I don't know why I reintroduced everybody, but, you know, whatever.
Why not?
Well, yeah. I was tardy, so it's good to do it multiple times. Also, we got a message from Brendan. He's listening to us right now.
Hi, Brendan.
We have at least one listener.
Yay!
You're awesome, Brendan. You and your friends.
Go team! Yeah! Absolutely. Now, we do realize we have more than one listener, and today's topic is when tackling the very important issue of misogyny in the gay community and how it translates into the language that we use around just the gay culture. Mm-hmm. For example, we were talking
about Twink. There is no monolithical gay culture.
There is no monolithical gay culture. Absolutely right. I know you have a rant about being a twink. take it away. Take it away.
Okay. I'm a gay man because I like masculine. I tend to like uber masculine. All the markers of stereotypical masculinity to me make my jaw just go wide open and I drool. So when I see a guy who's really hot to me, that's like Neanderthal male. Seriously, it's like solid hairline, and I don't have one. Unibrow, ears that stick out slightly, hairy, swarthy body, slightly darker skin than mine. This is like these guys that were in this band. All of them were, to me, were totally hot and totally my type. That isn't necessarily who I end up having sex with, because I will have sex with so many different kinds of body types, because it's not about the body, it's more about the mind, blah, blah, blah. But now we're going back into the twink part. I grew up as a twink and I despised it. I absolutely hated having the non-masculine body. And eventually I joined a gym. Several fails at that, and then eventually became a personal trainer, and I have what I consider a more masculine to me body, but there are other kinds of masculinity as well. So there we go. To me, twink is almost the same thing as child. People who like the twink body to me are pederasts, verging possibly onto pedophilia.
Now, Whisper, there's been a whole bunch of traction on here. Just to give you some quotes, some folks on Whisper. One person said, "I don't like being defined as a twink or bottom. I'm a person, not a sex toy."
Yeah.
Somebody else said, "I really don't get why gay men have to label all the body types. As a twink, I don't like the stereotypes that come with it." Of course, there are. It's laden with stereotypes, yes. Often couched in misogyny. It took me years to feel attractive as a twink. Now, instead of wishing I was different, I just live with who I am, which is, okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
Owning it. Gay culture makes me sad sometimes. The more masculine you look, the more attractive you are. I'm a twink, so don't get a ton of attention. I think that really hits to the crux of the issue here.
Mm-hmm. Well, then there's the other side of it as well. The people who honor the twink body, the people who lust after the twink body. There are thousands and thousands of people out there who engage in porn aimed at them with the twink body in mind. Mm. You go looking at porn sites, what do you see? Lots and lots of post-pubescent boys.
You know, it's really weird. I hear all this discussion about how, like, twinks don't feel attractive and they don't feel included in gay culture. But I remember when I was in my young 20s, only the twinks were engaging in gay culture, and
yes.
Only them. And
yes.
Because I never was. I mean, I didn't have the body type. I'm far too large framed for that. And I don't think I'm exactly uber masculine, but like there are people who, when I first meet them, they just assume I'm a country boy because I have that kind of...
You're sort of laid back and relaxed. Yeah.
And so I never really fit into that sort of, a lot of that, The
club kid culture.
Yeah, the club kid culture, that world, which is ironic because I actually went almost every weekend and I loved dancing, but I was never really welcomed in.
Right.
I ended up, most of my friends when I was in my young 20s were in their late 20s or even their early 30s because I just didn't, nobody would accept me into their little crowd. And
perfect body syndrome, yeah.
Yeah, and so I don't know. Whenever I read these things, I mean, there's different communities as well. Different places have different standards. So, I mean, if you are 5'10 and you are 100 pounds wet, then you are still too fat for Hamilton. Mm-hmm. When I was young, Hamilton really liked skinny guys. And then you go to Montreal and they have a real muscle worship culture.
But it also depends on which bars you do go to. And yeah, Montreal has a certain look all of its own.
Yeah.
It's really hard to describe unless you've been there.
Yeah.
It's fit. It's really fit.
Yeah.
And if you're not at least coming close to that look, you're not going to find people look at you more than once.
Or at least not on La Rue Sainte-Catherine. You'll have to go elsewhere.
That's right. You got to go off the strip and then you'll find there's other places where people hang out that are not the so-called perfect, beautiful people.
The A-gays, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a real A-gay culture there.
Yeah.
But just, I don't know, I remember when I was in my younger 20s and I was in the age bracket that I would have been considered a twink. I was not considered a twink. And it was, that was the A-gay at the time. Mind you, that was I'm aging myself a little bit, but that was the the early 2000s, and it was a real big...
That look really hasn't gone away in terms of its popularity, if you will. You still look out there and the porn, unless you're going for the more, how shall we call it, masculine-looking porn, where they say the Falcon Studio and things like that.
I like how on a daytime, noontime show, you're just listing gay porn studios.
I know what I like.
Trivia quiz.
We've had this discussion before, though, about studios that make gay porn for women, and I started listing studios that do that.
And the ones that make porn for women tend to use the twink body. Did you know that?
They tend to use jocks. It's usually athletic-looking guys who are in their mid-20s.
That's porn regardless, but it's the less filled-out body type and muscularity that they go for.
I want to bring it back to the issue. I would pose the question, really.
Mm-hmm.
Is the stereotype... How are the stereotypes associated with twink misogynistic?
Well... Because they're not what we decide are masculine, or not masculine enough. And then we go back into that whole societal construct of you're either one or you're not.
I think what you're aiming for is something more like a lot of the things that we assume of bar girls, mm-hmm. we assume of twinks. So we assume that they're ditzy. We assume that they consume a lot of substances, let's say.
Yes.
I suppose if you're considering looking at the bar culture. Yeah.
That they're superficial. They're sex-crazed, but also picky enough that they never actually have sex.
I've actually met many individuals like that.
Actually, it's when they stop worrying about their body that they start having sex.
Yeah. Mm. Well, it's when they stop worrying about the bodies of others as well. What else? There's certain kinds of music they listen to. There's certain kinds of shows they watch. I mean,
you got to be all fashionable.
you only celebrate whoever's in the news right now. So I remember when I was younger, everyone was like, Madonna's forever. Madonna will never die. And everyone's like, 5 years ago, everything was all about Lady Gaga.
Yeah. And then she's dropped like a wet stone.
Just completely dropped. Yeah. And now she's been replaced by...
Somebody.
Azalea? No.
Beyonce.
Lemonade. Yeah. I mean, Beyonce for sure, yeah.
I guess I'm just not hip. I'm not happening. I'm not
it's
current.
Definitely,
you're not with the hip and the hop.
To a degree, I don't feel like Beyonce earned her stripes quite the same.
This is true. Beyonce's been in and out. She's,
Madonna's been in and out, but only when she releases something is she ever considered in now.
This is true. Kylie, occasionally. Yeah. But, anyway, one of the other issues I have is
But
that
anyway, no. Going back to answer your question about...
I want to jump on the
misogyny
well.
And misogyny
well,
in gay men.
I'll let you go.
So... It's just this assumption that whatever we think of bar girls, we assume of young twinks as well. And there actually is, I have a story pertaining to this. When I was younger, one of my friends, he identified as a twink, he embraced it. But largely it was because between the ages of 18 and 25, that's going to be my sex life. And then after that, I'm going to give up.
Oh,
and
they are so wrong.
Yeah, I know. Well, no. That was going to be his wild years. Those were going to be years where he went clubbing, where he did the substances and all blah, blah, blah. And then after that, he would focus on his career. But so he had this bar twink reputation, and one day he brought me back to his place and he's like, okay, I'm going to show you something, but you have to promise not to tell anyone. And it was this room that every time I'd ever gone over, it was locked, and he was going to show me the room. I had assumed when he put his hand on the door handle, I thought it was going to be like some kind of like a whips and trains room or something like that, because he was really secretive about it. But it actually turned out to be a room. There was a desk with three monitors so that he could play EverQuest. The second monitor was that he could run a companion program that analyzed EverQuest. And then the third one was a TV screen so he could watch Buffy while he was playing EverQuest. Floor-to-ceiling hardcover classics of science fiction.
My nipples are getting hard.
Framed. He had a large framed oil painting of a chimera. That was made for him, that he commissioned.
Wow.
He was basically a closet geek, and he felt that because he was geeky and because he was also an amazingly masculine country boy. So he was kind of like, what was his name? The interior decorator, Stephen Sabados, where he came across as effeminate, and then he put like an axe in his hand and he could just like chop wood in like 5 seconds and he could like saw and
everything.
Hammer and drill. Yeah. And like he came across as effeminate, but he was deeply masculine when it came to handy stuff, and he's like, no, don't talk
about it. But is that right there a little bit of misogyny?
The assumption.
You should see my sister with an axe.
True, yeah.
Like, he should take an axe and go see your sister.
Yeah,
or
yeah,
like,
and she'll deal with him.
There's actually, I saw a clip on YouTube some time ago of a woman who was holding a baby in one hand and chopping wood with the other.
Yeah, that's so, the way it's done, people. Really.
Yeah.
Things to do. Things
yeah,
to
I
do.
Know. But it was this weird thing where he was like, he refused to let people in on this side of him until he
was ready.
Until his twink years were done, because he felt like he would not have the sex that he wanted, or date people that he wanted, or get the free drugs that he wanted.
So many gay geeks that their geekiness is part of their hotness.
But the world is changing. That's starting to be more accepted.
Yeah. I mean, one of the people on Whisper said, sometimes being a twink and looking young is hard because people don't always take you seriously. And I think that sums it up.
Yeah. You could say that about absolutely anybody.
Yeah.
Well, that's
you really
true.
Could.
I find that people tend to dismiss twinks.
When we're looking at things like this on Whisper, yeah, I dismiss it all the time, because to me, that's a valid opinion for some of the population, just like every other meme out there. It's a valid opinion for some of the population.
Mm-hmm.
There is no monolithical gay culture. There is no monolithical gay twink.
Mm-hmm. When I was a few years ago, when I was in first and second year undergrad, there was definitely a group of young gay men, all of whom were twinks, and I stood out like a sore thumb.
Yeah,
like,
there's not much like twinky about you.
No, there's nothing. Even before I had the beard, nothing twinky whatsoever. And, you know, this group kind of acted a bit homogenous, but over the last couple of years, as they've grown up a little bit...
You mean
their bodies
have finished adapting into manhood?
Well, no, they've come to... become more comfortable with their bodies, that they're kind of taking ownership over it. And
they also spend less time together. They do. If it's the group that I think of, they moved like a herd.
It's true. But it's also a self-reinforcing group, absolutely. Yeah. One of my issues with the misogyny around folks who are twinks is that it has to do with power dynamics.
Mm-hmm.
And that it puts them into a position where they're less able to negotiate consent. Because there's the assumption... That they're going to be submissive and in the submissive roles. And
is that really any different from any other group that's it's involved in that kind of dynamic?
Well, I mean, it speaks to the extreme position where women can't consent to sex. The whole idea that I'm sure you're familiar with that particular position.
Yeah, we've seen it in the news out of the States again recently too. Yeah.
But no, so the idea that effeminate gay men or twinks are coming from a position where they don't have the same level of power with more masculine gay men, and as a result, it's more difficult to negotiate safe sex. There was a study in Toronto of Southeast Asian men, which has the same assumptions. A lot of the same assumptions about twinks are held across with Southeast Asian men. And they've seen HIV infection rates disproportionately higher with Southeast Asian men. It'll be interesting to see if that translates also to the twinks. I don't know how you would study that, because you'd have to get everyone to be like,
if you look at the supposed age range of the twink body, you're also going to discover it's the same age group that doesn't have the history of growing up with AIDS as a killer.
Yeah.
Mm. We're going to jump on Kazaki, which is a Ukrainian Armenian band. And it's not the one that I found a different one. But we will play out with Lion.
Oh my God!
We'll
look at those heels.
Owen Pallett.
Oh, those are so
hot.
The
reason why I want to jump to Kazaki, and it made me think of it earlier, is that they are a they're oozing masculinity.
Yes, gender, pardon the expression, but gender-ing.
Yes, they're just very masculine, but they walk around in high heels and they're just owning it. So much.
High heels were originally masculine.
Yeah, they were. But they kept us out of the blood of the slaughterhouses.
It's it's a great... and it's a very... It always reminds me of...
they are hot.
Like
look at these guys.
Typically, you know, like the stereotypical gay bars where it's like... This is very much the type of music that reminds me of that. So this is a bit of a cliche, hyper-masculine... always feel what you need. You wanna touch me. You wanna touch me now. You wanna touch me. When the music plays round. Touch me. You wanna touch me more. You wanna touch me. And it takes higher and higher. Touch me.
love is all they need. But at night you come back to your desires, and again I feel what you need. I feel what you need.
You wanna touch me.
You can touch me now.
You wanna touch me.
When the music is loud.
You wanna touch me.
You can touch me more.
You wanna touch me.
And it is high.
Hello and welcome back, and today we are talking about the importance of language. Now, that was Kazaki, and we mentioned it's very cliche, but the way that they're demonstrating masculinity...
Oh, yes.
And
it's not over yet. It's still playing.
No, but it's that's all we've got time for, because we want to...
Because that was just like having porn
well,
in the office.
We'll be playing up with some Owen Pallett, and Sebastian can talk about why we chose that one in just a few minutes. Before we do... What I want to talk about is the conversation around cisgendered and trans. Now, when I talk to folks, because we're talking a lot about language and the importance of language here, and I think Sebastian has a great point that he can jump in on. But when I tell folks about trans, because I do the recruit training with the auto police, it's cis bonding is a scientific, like a chemical bonding, and it's the idea that things match up. So
right, you're attracted to like.
Yeah, absolutely. You're filling out a form, you know, is your sex male, as in the genitalia, tick, yes. Is your gender identity, is you close your eyes and you think you're a man, then yes, cool, that's tick. Do you express yourself as a male, then tick. And then if all of those things are in a row, well done, good job, you're cisgendered. Anything else, I mean, same for woman, female, and right. feminine. Anything else outside of that is it falls under the vast trans umbrella, and there's things that where people may reject it, and there's so many nuances in the community, and that we couldn't. We would have to devote a month of programming just to cover it. But in its simplest terms, cis is things which are perfectly lined up. And
binary.
Trans things that do not. Yes.
Right.
But it is using the binary scale. Now, I know that Sebastian had a conversation with someone recently where they rejected that very premise. Or that use of the term cis and trans.
Oh God, that was some time ago, and it was actually an article that I had read where they were saying that using cis versus trans is a form of colonialism or something.
Well, yeah, it's oppressive.
Yes. Well, it's not just... Okay, so...
It's oppressive. It can be oppressive both ways.
Cis actually is Latin, and it just means on the same side of.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually looked up, because I have the internet in my hands. cis alpine is a term that's used in Germany. So, like, if you are on that side of the Alps in Germany versus there's a tiny crack of Germany that is on the other side of the Alps,
yeah.
So that's a transalpine
right.
community as opposed to cisalpine,
which is part of the unity.
Most of Germany. Yeah. So it just means on the same side of. But anyway, so using cisgendered as a term or identifying as cisgendered, this person who wrote the article said that what they were doing is they were moving into a trans space because... using the language of trans-identified people to describe non-trans-identified people and embracing it, what you're doing is you're stepping in. It's sort of like when straight people say on the down low, which I still find very bizarre.
Yeah, straight white people.
For those of you who don't know, on the down low, what that expression actually means is that you secretly have sex with other men, most likely black men, and you are probably also black.
Yes.
So on the down low is actually an expression used by the gay black community in America to indicate that you are secretly having sex. Whether it's as a closeted person or not, that's a different issue.
Yeah.
But it's just whenever I hear straight people say on the down low, I'm like, ooh.
yeah, it's a little awkward for those who understand.
Ooh, yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. It's same thing. Like there's people who make arguments about when you come out the closet as a Republican, like it's just this weird kind of thing.
I outed myself. I used to be a card-carrying conservative way back. Mm. Yeah.
Wow. Did you give the card back to the person you took it from, or?
I don't get it. What?
Okay, anyway, moving on.
Yeah. That was here at Carlton, actually. Yeah. Oh. Back in the day.
But yes, so I mean, I understand that. It's the idea that it differentiates. It sets aside trans community, mm-hmm. And it others them, yeah. essentially.
Yes. There's a lot of people out there, and I try to do this myself a lot. I'm probably still so conscious of doing it because it's something that's relatively new to me, is the rejection of pigeonholes and the rejection of identifiers, because technically we are all one. We're all like different facets of the same diamond. We're humanity, and we all shine differently when the light hits us differently. Mm-hmm. So we're all part of one. So why are we bothering labeling and dividing?
I think you had a great... we were talking about this before, the idea of intersectionality and how you're the stereotype of a Franco-Canadian, but a Franco-Canadian is also stereotypically gay and so on and so forth.
Well, this is... It's called the ethnographic methodology. I used it in linguistics. It's also used in a lot of social sciences. What an ethnography does is it looks at you as the intersection of a whole bunch of things. So you have the cultural factors and the cultural influences and the cultural forces of being a part of a whole bunch of different things. And then you also have, like, ethnographies also acknowledge microcultures. Mm-hmm. So a relationship between you and one friend where you have your own history, you have your own language, you have your own references, you have your own way of talking to each other, your own traditions, that is a microculture between two people. So you are the intersection of all these cultures together and microcultures.
It's a matrix.
Well, sort of. So, you know, me as a Franco-Ontarian, me as a gay man, me as an academic, I am typical of all those things, but I'm typical of a gay man in the context of all those other things. Mm-hmm. So they all sort of influence each other one by one. It also kind of, the ethnographic method is useful in linguistics because it also explains why people speak differently in different contexts. So you choose the language that's appropriate to whatever cultural.
Yeah. Why do you speak one way with your grandmother than you do with your brother?
Because the culture within family versus the culture between you and, I mean,
and your best friend.
They're really stretching what it means to be a culture when you do it this way. But still, I mean, they're talking as it like politeness and standards and history and you know,
dialects of language,
the common ground, the shared language, the whole everything. I mean, they're really getting abstract with culture here. But that's the ethnography there. But if you're looking at how would you apply that to sort of a queer experience, that that we are exactly that, we are the influence of all these different things, but it's also to a degree it's what we let influence us, but it's also things that we don't let influence us but are still in our environment. So even if you reject this notion of embracing the feminine as a gay man, that is still in the background. Mm-hmm. You know, there are people who do that. And so even if you have to fight against it, I mean, if you embrace it or fight against it, you're still acknowledging it. You're still existing in that space.
He thinks he does protest too much.
Yeah. The only way, I mean, you kind of can't escape it. Even if you're just ignoring it and going about your own business, that's still something that you have to do deliberately. That you always exist within these contexts. Now, you can, I mean, this is, yeah, sorry. I had a thing, but it's gone.
I accept you.
I think you're definitely right. And, you know, a lot of language in particular does develop in different cultures and how we use them. I'm just going to put in a tiny clip here of two gay men speaking Polari, which is specifically a language used by gay men in Britain.
Yes.
How do you mean?
I've got your number, ducky.
Well, there's a really long pause in the video here. That's
where's your flowery then?
You've played this video
it's
before.
It's a house road.
Yeah.
You should skip to the part where they start talking about Pauline.
I don't know who Pauline is, but the idea that I've got your number, ducky, is one of the phrases. Well, here we go. Hopefully this will be here.
Mind you, it's the dolly ones that disappoint. Mm. I was seeing this HP from Sheffield once. Plates the size of bowling pins. Thought it was in for a right boner chavering.
Nada Tavada in the larder.
Oh, bijou. You needn't put the brandy on for that, I said when I saw it.
I have no idea what that meant.
Well, I actually understood a fair deal of it. So plates is teeth. I know that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So there's an awful lot of similarity between Cockney to English and what did you call this? Polaris?
Polari
to English.
Mm-hmm. Polari is the Romani word for just how to speak.
Cool.
Because it was partly developed by gypsies and circus workers as well.
So any subgroup in society has its own code language.
It's called a jargon.
Yeah.
That's the technical term. It's actually a jargon. Yeah.
It's not anything different than you'll experience in any other part of the world.
When I lived in Japan, I spoke a jargon. It was a contact... Well, it wasn't even a contact language. It was a way of English speakers distinguishing people who lived in Japan from tourists and people on military bases.
Right.
You'd go to a bar and you'd start speaking in this really... It's really hard to explain, but like there's this alternative way of speaking, and there's things that are ungrammatical in both English and Japanese that were sort of mixed into the language, and all sorts of weird things, and a smattering of Japanese, and you'd speak in English and then switch to Japanese just for one sentence and then go back.
Sort of like speaking franglais.
Kind of, yeah. But it
French
was...
French and English mixed.
Wenglish.
It was a little bit more...
Yeah.
It was standardized, though. There was a way of doing it. So there are common things like...
Right. Well, I do remember, because I watched a lot of British TV when I was younger, when I actually watched TV, a lot of the Monty Python influence on our language was huge, and a lot of the...
You actually did the reference a little earlier.
Yeah.
Yes. Graham Chapman, the blonde one who played Brian in Life of Brian, for those of you who don't remember specifically.
Oh, that was
he
so
actually
late
was a gay man, and he was a Polari speaker.
And they used a lot of it in the comedy.
They actually mix it in,
A lot of the language of Monty Python became something that we all used because we watched so much of it.
So how do we keep this rich cultural history of gay language and gay terminology,
you
gay
can't
words,
keep it in
alive.
A box.
How do we keep it alive? But also,
you can't keep it
keep
pure.
Keep it modern. Keep it modern insofar
it's alive.
Hear me. Hear me out.
As
keep
long
it modern.
As it's used.
Keep it modern to keep out some of the misogyny that's inherent in it. You know, how do we tackle misogyny in the gay community whilst also maintaining what's essentially recent cultural history?
Oh, really?
Luke,
we're going to go there?
Don't look a gift horse.
Under 2 minutes.
Don't look a gift horse in the mouth. Do you know where that expression comes from?
The Greeks, isn't it?
No.
No.
Oh, no.
It's horse trading.
Oh.
You can tell a horse's age, health, and what they did over the course of life, if they were a racing horse, a labor horse, or whatever, just by looking at its teeth.
Yeah. And,
so
teeth
if somebody
cruddy.
Gives you a horse, you don't pry open its mouth, look at its teeth, and say, no, thank you. A free horse is a free horse. You say thank you.
And then you take it in around the backside of the barn and you open its mouth there.
Yeah. And if it's crappy, you just slaughter it and feed it to the dogs.
Or eat it yourself.
Or eat it yourself.
Yeah.
We're getting a lot of horse advice here.
The reason why I mention this is you kind of can't escape it. The apple of my eye. Your pupils used to be called apples. Three sheets to the wind. Three sheets are actually the three sails
on a tavern.
A boat. No, on a boat.
On a boat, okay.
And so when you have three sheets to the wind, that's full wind, though the sailors don't have to work. They can just drink. So we have these expressions. You kind of can't kill off something from a language. There will always be traces.
Yeah.
And I kind of, you know, I would like to see it all go away, but you always have these traces.
And the misogyny of gay, inter-gay language, if you will, is always going to be there. We just don't talk about it in public with the straight people because we don't want them using those words.
I think we can still work on it, but not in today's show because we've run out of time.
Oh, darn!
Owen Pallett's This Lamb Sells Condors. Why'd you choose that one?
So Owen Pallett actually started his career as a musician when he was like 18. And I think he did this when he was 25. So he kind of – and he has the twink body type, and you're just talking about twinks. Specifically, This Lamb Sells Condos, because this song is off of one of his concept albums where 12 out of 14 of the tracks are based on the 12 schools of magic from 2nd edition Dungeons & Dragons.
Nice.
Kind of hilarious.
This song is a metaphorical representation of the school of conjuration, which is the act of creating something out of nothing. And specifically, This Lamb Sells Condos was the advertising campaign of Brad Lamb, who's a condo developer, who bought up all the cheap land surrounding the Church Street and wanted to tear it down and replace it
with
condos. And so this is actually a song about the history of Church Street and how a developer was going to basically kill the gayborhood.
Culturally specific.
Yeah.
Excellent. And we'll be back next week. And this is Owen Pallett's This Lamb Sells Condos.
Loved up a portrait, and yes, it is his own. He's gonna take your home. Have you seen our visitor? Look over the treetops, newly conjured erections are making him a killing, and Richmond Street is illing. So the graduates are willing to buy him to the pillage. Now there's no hope for the village. Genitals refuse to cooperate. No amount of therapy can hope to save his marriage. But the prisoners be silent. But be silent and be sharp.